All right, we are halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3. The Fan. The Flan yesterday. Tim Flannery joined us. I didn't even make that joke.
You never, not once, on the Flan?
No, 97.3 The Flan. I didn't do it. He was spectacular. One of those, look, I rarely say, hey, you need to go back and listen. If you missed it, you need to go back and listen. It was really, really good stuff. The stories he told from his many, many years in the big leagues were just spectacular. The Boach stories. I mean, Benny, I'll tell you one in a minute. I'll introduce the show. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. You are Benjamin Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. There's a really great story he told because we were talking about bunting. And he was the bunt doctor. He was the guy who had to teach all the pitchers how to bunt.
You're the bunt
hater. I'm the bunt hater.
It's awkward.
Yeah. I've just leaned into the bit at this point. The other night when Crony had that safety squeeze, my Twitter feed just went bing, 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 bing. And I'm like, bunting for a hit is cool. Bunting for a hit is cool. Flan, you know, it was different. Pitchers had to hit, so he had to teach them to bunt.
I mean, compared to most teams, I think the Padres are pretty good bunters, actually.
Yeah, yeah, they get it down.
They get the job done most of the time.
They don't get the run in, though. And for me, it's always situational. Right. It's always situational. Like Jerkson. You know, we're down 2-0 in the fifth. You're my 3-hole hitter. I need you hacking, bro. And he's like, that's the way we play. That's the way I've played in Curacao. Mike Schilt lets me play that way. Great. Okay. So it's funny. We asked Flan about Boach and what were his thoughts. The Giants of old, they had a team meeting without Boach, just the players. And they said, hey, we're going to bunt more. But bunt on your own.
Don't tell the coaches.
Tell the manager. And Flan said, because their pitching was so good, he's like, we're in Colorado, and Marco Scudero lays down a sack bunt in the third inning, and Boach is like screaming at me, and he's hanging over the dugout. Did you call that? And he goes, I didn't call it. He goes, after the game, he goes into Boach's office. He goes, they had a meeting without you, dude. I had nothing to do. They're doing this on their own. They wanted to get all of their starting pitchers a run or two because they knew that the guys would go out and shove. They wanted to get them a lead. And he's like, yeah, they had a meeting behind your back. That's how, because they wanted to bunt more. So, it was great. The stories, the insight, all of that was spectacular yesterday. I really, really enjoyed that. So go back and listen, if you are so able.
I mean, I can see the appeal as a player, especially if you're a good bunter. It's a low risk way to make you feel like you're helping your team.
It is such a lift to get the ass pats after that.
Yep.
Woods, great job.
You get the pats on the back, you move the runner into scoring position, and you know what you do? You put the pressure squarely on someone else.
Yeah.
The next guy who has to come in with two outs and try to get a single and drive in that runner from second base.
Did my job.
I don't know that that's your job, though, as a Major League Baseball player. As a college baseball player.
Not a three-hole hitter.
Maybe as a little leaguer. But as a Major League Baseball player, your job is not to pass the buck to someone else to come through an even tougher pressure situation with now two outs and a guy on second. Thanks a lot, dude. I guarantee you that there are some thoughts in the head of the guy in the on-deck circle going, I don't want you to bunt this guy over to second and add to what is already a pressure at bat for me. Thanks a lot.
I know. And again, it was fantastic stuff. And, you know, again, guys are trying to do a lot. And he was talking about the Padres' approach this year. He said it's the same type of guys that they had with the Giants. They just want to feel like they're helping. And so inherently it's a good thing, right? They want to feel like they're doing their job and getting guys in, getting guys over. Problem is you got to get those guys in. You know, once you get them over, you got to get them in. And that's been a little bit of a bugaboo. I was texting with Jesse Agler. We're going to be joined by Jesse in about 30 minutes. I texted him the other day in the middle of a game about bunting, and he starts firing stats at me about Profar. And I think Profar's been successful. I think we scored runs 50% of the time with him and maybe 33% of the time when Merrill did it. And he's like, I see what you're saying, but I think it's recency bias on your part.
All right, Joey in the chat says, that's what taking a walk is, Benjamin, essentially passing the buck on to the next guy. No. A walk doesn't add to the three precious outs
Correct.
That you get every inning.
It doesn't give up
an out. It doesn't count against your outs. A sacrifice bunt does. It's a third of your out. 33%.
I play with Joey.
Of your valuable outs.
Joey does not like to walk. So I know exactly where he's coming from.
I'm okay with walks. Walks are good. Sacrifice bunts, I tend to think towards Woods' side of the equation.
Yeah,
not that valuable.
Hey, man, at time and place, certainly. You know, first and second, eighth inning, ninth inning, you know, you're up one, down one, no problem, man. Drop it down, see the next next guy can get it over or get him in. No big deal. Especially if it's Tyler Wade, if it's Bryce Johnson, you know, whatever. Fine. But if it's Jurickson Profar and Jackson Merrill, I want you swinging the bat. Manny Machado, I want you swinging the bat. Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, I want you swinging the bat. That's what you get paid. They don't pay the best bunters in on the planet $30 million a year to blink to get the ass pats after moving a guy over.
Do you hate the extra inning runner on second bunting him over to third?
I kind of do.
Top of the inning or bottom of the inning? All right.
Well, if you're playing for a tie, then you want to maybe get. But again, he's in scoring position.
I generally think it's not a great idea because, all right, let's say you're the top of the inning. You know, I think the only argument would be, all right, it's the top of the inning. Our closer. We still haven't used our closer.
Right, he's ready to go.
And he could possibly strand that runner out at second. So if we get our runner in, we got a chance to win it. But if it's the bottom of the inning, you've already probably used your closer. So it's more than likely you're going to need two runs to win the game, not one. And a bunt moving a guy over from second to third is not helping you score the two runs you probably need to win that game. So you're generally not in favor of it.
You're banking on him scoring on the fly, the sack fly.
Right. Yeah. Which is not a guarantee either.
Yeah. Whereas he's going to probably score on a base hit second.
More than likely,
unless it's shallow. But then you have two on with nobody out. Right. Like, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, sure. I just, again, you know, if it's 1-0 in the 1-0 in the 10th inning and you're on second base and you have a chance to move him over, maybe try it. But also, you can hit a single and you're probably going to score. It's just giving up outs, they're so precious. And I think, like I said, time and place for it. Time and place, certainly. But, yeah, people in the chat talking about Xander Bogaerts coming back. We've been talking about that this morning. Yeah, I mean, again, your hope for Xander is that he returns to even just a little bit of the form that he had while he was in Boston. I hope this time away did him some good. Watching how his guys have grinded and you know, played without him, wanting to be a part of that. I have a good feeling about it. I said it last week. I don't know why I do. I just do. I have a feeling he's going to come back and play well. I've eaten my words many times. I don't want to eat them this time, though. I want to be right.
I would expect him to be activated, like, possibly today.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's in town, he was in El Paso over the weekend on a rehab assignment. So we know he's in San Diego. He wouldn't be here if he wasn't going to.
I don't disagree with you, Woods, but I would caution Padres fans to have a little patience.
You're going to have to
when it comes to Xander coming back. If he doesn't look like Xander in the first week, like before the All-Star break, doesn't mean he won't ever. He hasn't played in, you know, a couple of months. Wasn't necessarily locked in before that either. You're going to have to give him some time. He went down to AAA. What has he played? 3 games in AAA?
Not that it matters, but forgive me if I'm wrong. Wasn't he starting to heat up
when
he got hurt?
He was starting to heat up a little bit. Yeah, he was definitely swinging the bat a little bit better. But to think that he's going to come back, you know, Tatis is, especially, you know, earlier in his career, had a couple of stints where he'd come off injured list, not playing or COVID, and then have a 2 home run game, look incredible. That's the anomaly. What usually happens is guys take a few days against big league pitching now to kind of get their timing, everything locked in. I don't think that you can fairly expect Xander to just come in guns a-blazing and, you know, putting up a 950 OPS for the first, you know, 5 games here before the All-Star break. If, in fact, he is back today, maybe it's tomorrow, maybe it's Friday. I don't know when it's going to be. Does seem like it's going to be sooner, though, rather than later here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, it's at some point he needs to start playing like the guy that we went out and signed, the Silver Slugger Xander Bogaerts. And, you know, with the injury, he's healthy. I know he wasn't lighting the world on fire in El Paso. It doesn't mean anything. We've seen the opposite happen. Guys light it up in El Paso, can't hit big league pitching. Xander has a track record. Not so far in San Diego, really. I mean, he was okay last year. Like, he was better than people, I think, gave him credit for. But, yeah, we need that from him, man. Because, again, he's been a guy that's been through the stretch runs and World Series and all that. Like, he's a winner. Like, he knows exactly what it takes. So the fact that he's coming back in the next couple of days, I think I'm gonna rest on the side of I'm excited about it. This is good for the team. Yeah, it's going to make Mike Schilt's job and AJ Preller's job with the holistic lineup a little bit more difficult, but it also lengthens your lineup when you get a guy like that back. So I realize that there's a weird position shortage there, but it's up to them to figure it out, and if not, they're going to have to find somebody, Ben, to replace the guys out in the outfield. But I'm totally with you. I'm going to err on the side of he's going to come back and hopefully do some damage.
Keep in mind, Padres are going to be going up against some tough pitching
for
this last week before the All-Star break. We mentioned today Logan Gilbert for the Mariners. He's an All-Star. Really exciting. There was a video of him calling his family and letting them know that he made the All-Star team. Tomorrow is Bryce Miller, another good young pitcher for the Mariners, who's got a sub-4 ERA. Maybe not dominant, but certainly has been a solid starting pitcher now for going on two seasons for the Seattle Mariners. And then this weekend, you've got the Atlanta Braves. Now, they've tinkered with their rotation a little bit, including Chris Sale got skipped over yesterday. But he is supposed to pitch today, which would put him in line to pitch on Sunday against Dylan Cease. The other two, a little more up in the air. Right now, ESPN has Spencer Schwellenbach listed for Friday night's game. He is a right-hander. And then they have...
Sounds like a two-hit shutout.
Yeah,
and then they have Ronaldo Lopez, who's been very good.
Really good.
Scheduled for Saturday's game for the Braves to wrap up the first half of the season.
The converted reliever that everyone was worried about. He wasn't going to be able to handle the starting pitcher workload, and he has done that and then some for the Atlanta Braves. So, yeah, man, it does not get any easier for this team. And I said it yesterday, Benny, you weren't here. Razor's edge, you know, really. I do feel like they are on the razor's edge right now with all the injuries, with the, you know, you being on the restricted list, the depth issues right now. I do feel like it's a little bit of a razor's edge. It can really
and give them credit. I mean,
they have been for a while.
Usually when a team's on that razor's edge of injury, you're hoping they can tread water, and they've actually done better than that. Despite the injuries, they played good baseball. But that hasn't taken them off the razor's edge.
Correct.
Still squarely there.
Teetering.
Getting Bogart's help, as we mentioned earlier, it helps a little.
A little bit.
But doesn't really address any of the real issues, which is outfield, bullpen, and starting pitching. None of those issues are addressed by the return of Xander Bogart's this week.
Yeah, not really. Not really at all.
All right, coming up in this half of the program, mention our guests, Jesse Agler, Kyle Higashioka. Also have some giveaways. We got some Padres tickets to give away coming up against the Seattle Mariners for tomorrow's game. That's one of those not-quite-day, not-quite-night games tomorrow.
I'll be there.
It's a 3:40 first pitch.
It's the 1984 day. They're honoring the 1984 team. Tim Flannery going to sing the national anthem tomorrow.
Ah, very nice. National anthem?
Yeah, play it and sing it.
Very cool.
We're going to do the whole family going. Can't wait.
But when we come back, speaking of playing, we're going to give away some tickets to John Fogerty at the Shell.
Name that tune.
And Woodsy's got his guitar here for Kyle Higashioka's appearance. We're going to play a little John Fogerty, Name That Tune. But remember, it's not going to sound exactly like John Fogerty because it's Woods.
Yeah, I'm not
Fogerty.
That good.
So you're going to have to try to, you know, think deeply and identify the Fogerty song. But if you want to get on the line and be a contestant, we need a full line of contestants because you get one guess. Woodsy plays the tune, name it, and you can win the tickets. Coming up next, 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. You're going to take on Woods with Woods. Coming up next on 97.3 The Fan. Tell me about your guitar, the one you brought in, Woods. By the way, you can call in right now for your chance to win the Fogerty tickets by identifying Woods playing Fogerty / CCR here in a couple of minutes. But this is a fairly special guitar.
Yeah, it is. We've all heard the story of the Terminator, right? We tell it every
Christmas
year.
Extravaganza.
Christmas and holiday extravaganza. I really wanted an electric guitar when I was a little kid. And my dad, for Christmas, bought me a guitar called the Terminator. And it was a 9-volt battery powered electric guitar with a speaker that was built in, like in the upper right part of it. And I was so disappointed because
Mid 80s?
Yeah, this is like I was probably 12, So
late 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to play Poison and Rat and everything.
It's like
else.
The play school version of
yeah, it's exactly what
guitar.
It was. It was like the play school version. You know, my old man was doing his best. He didn't know. And I remember being so disappointed. And, of course, we've had so much fun with it over the years. So one year, for my birthday, he said, hey, meet me for lunch. And I said, all right. So I went and had lunch with him. I was working, like, I think I was in radio sales at the time. And he says, come meet me for lunch. So I met him. And he goes, oh, before you leave, I got a birthday present for you. So I go out to the car. He opens up the trunk, and there's this case. with this, it says Fender on it. And I went, oh, what the hell is this? And I open it up, and there's this beautiful, beautiful Fender Stratocaster in there. American made. It is stunning. It is a beautiful guitar. Now, it's completely wasted on me because I am straight rhythm. I don't play a lot of licks and stuff.
You don't make it cry or sing.
I don't make it cry or sing. I'm strictly rhythm. But I love it. And I will pass it down to one of my kids, whoever wants it. And it's just a beautiful thing. Now, the funny story is it's because it's my dad. He got a deal on it. And,
because an old guitar is all he can afford.
So he was in, I think he was in Chicago, and he was like, I'm gonna go walk in this guitar store. I've got some time to kill. And there was this guitar, and it's cool. It's like, what color would you say that is?
Like I'd mint? Call that, almost like a baby blue.
Baby blue, mint.
No, I like mint.
Mint. So, he walks in, and there was like, he started talking to the guy. He's like, my son plays, and I want to get a good one. Yeah, Periwinkle. And he says, I want to give him a guitar. And he goes, you know what's funny? He goes, I'll make you a good deal on this one. I made this for Jay Giles from the Jay Giles
band.
Wow. And he didn't like
Centerfold.
It. He didn't like the color. Like, there was something about it he didn't like. And he's like, So they sold it. So my dad got a good deal on it because it's my dad. My dad and Ben are very, very alike. It's scary. So, I mean, bro, I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it. But it is it's a beautiful, beautiful guitar, and I wish I was better at playing it.
So you brought it in. We've got Kyle Higashioka, who is also a guitar player.
He's like a
shredder,
who's
supposed
though.
To join us in studio in our next hour. We thought, well, we're giving away these Fogerty tickets coming to the Rady Show on September 4th. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. But we thought, why not do something fun to give them away? So we got callers on the line. We're going to bring you on the air. Woods is going to play like kind of like 2 second song version,
like
a lick.
2 second song.
And you need to identify the Fogerty / CCR song that he's trying to play at
right.
least for your chance to win. So let's bring on our first contestant. We got Andrew. Andrew, are you there?
I'm here.
All right.
What's
if
up,
you
Andrew?
Can identify the Fogerty song here, then you can win the tickets. Woodsy, you are up. Andrew, listen closely. Not bad. I kind of got it. Andrew, what song is that?
Come on. I see the moon rising.
Yes, sir!
One and done. Well done, Andrew. Stay on the line. Paul will get your information.
Never been the biggest Fogerty.
Okay, can we talk about center field?
We can.
It's an awkward baseball song. It doesn't quite resonate with a real diehard baseball fan. I think it's supposed to, but I don't quite feel it. I don't feel his love for baseball necessarily in that song.
My 6-year-old loves it. Loves
yeah,
it.
It's that's the kind of target demographic for
think,
center field, isn't
you,
it?
Do you think he hates playing it? Because my guess is that he absolutely does.
Maybe. Do yeah, think, I get the sense that he doesn't love
Let's
it.
Let's do karaoke. Do you know the words?
Yeah, I think. Oh. Well,
beat the drum.
Came out today. Born again, there's new grass on the field. Around the third, I'm heading for home. It's a brown-eyed, handsome man. Anyone can understand the way I feel. Oh, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play today. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play today. Look at me. I can be center field. Maybe part of it is that
I like that better. That version.
You
I like
just,
Ben's version.
You don't just go in and play center field without ever having played it before. At least that's what I thought until this year when Jackson Merrill did it and became an all-star by just basically saying, "Put me in, coach. Look at me.
Yeah,
I can be center field."
I don't think that's how it went down. It said, "Hey, guess what? You're playing center field.
You can be. Look at you, Jackson.
You can be
center field."
And he said, "Oh, okay." Put me in, coach. I can do this.
Well, Andrew, stay on the line. We'll get you those tickets. I'm looking at the set list. You will, in fact, hear center field.
Oh, you will?
Oh, yeah.
Based on previous shows of what Fogerty's been playing on
tour? It doesn't mean he doesn't hate playing it, though.
Right. I was just curious if he's even going to play it at all. But it looks like I looked through like four or five different shows recently from last month.
Yeah.
Same set list, top to bottom, and it's right there in the middle.
Is that thing out of tune? Somebody said tune that thing. Yeah, I've got a tuner. I'll tune it for Kyle. So
you
it
got
sounds,
an hour.
Sounds good. All right.
That was well done, though, by Andrew.
Yeah, very
well sharp, done. And I thought you did a really nice
thank
job
you.
Of
thank you. Thank
making
you.
That song identifiable.
I'll just tune it live on the air. You can go to break if you want.
Maybe just tune a little bit. How do you know what's... do you have a... How does that work?
This is a little tuner.
Does it, like, can identify the different notes?
Yep.
And to make sure they're correct? Oh, I never knew how that worked. I thought you just had to know exactly what like,
no.
C sounded
well,
like.
Well, some people do. I do
pitch
not.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
You're not pitch perfect.
No. They can tune it by ear. I cannot.
All right. Woods is going to tune his guitar. We'll come back. Jesse Agler is going to join us, the voice of the Padres. We need an incorporator word if you want to throw one into the chat during our break. Please do. We would love the suggestion. Jesse coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Don't forget, you can listen to Sam Levitt's podcast, Inside San Diego Baseball. Sam covers everything going on with the Padres. Just find it at 97.3thefansd.com, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcast that includes segments from the pre- and the post-game show. Sam is always doing all kinds of interviews down on the field, and you can get that at your convenience by downloading the free Odyssey app. All right, it is a Tuesday. We got Jesse Agler standing by to talk some Padres baseball. He will join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So I tweeted on Friday night when the Padres dramatically won 10-8 on the Manny Machado walk-off home run. Hey, better than a 7-2 win. And, of course, you get some pushback because, obviously, you had to use more bullpen arms. You stressed everybody out. But I think for an announcer, absolutely, a 7-2 no-drama win at the end provides no opportunity to shine the way Jesse Agler was able to shine on Friday night in what was one of the wildest innings of the Major League Baseball season. And Jesse joins us right now here on a Tuesday on 97.3 The Fan. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning. Yeah, that was that's one we'll remember for a very, very, very long time.
Now, while it's happening, it's not that fun because you're looking like, oh, this is going to be the worst loss of the season here, blowing a 5-run lead in the ninth inning. But in the hindsight, that was a fun one to call.
It was, and you know what was neat for me was, as somebody who watches literally every single pitch of this, you know, team, when it went to the bottom of the inning, I, in my brain, and this is really for the first time since the beginning of last year, I was like, I think they're going to do this.
Yep.
You know, because last season there came a point where I stopped feeling that way, sadly. You know, I mean, it was just sort of the reality of how last year went. And for the first half of last year, you know, it seemed like they had the right guys coming up in those spots time and time again, whether it was extra innings or just down by one in the ninth or whatever. And it just never happened. And it was flummoxing, and we've never been able to explain it, and we never will be able to explain it. And so I kind of lost the ability to be like, all right, I'm confident in this moment. But the way this team has played this year, even after, you know, the heartbreak and the gut punch at the top of the inning, you know, when you look down and you saw who was coming up in the bottom half, like during that commercial break in the middle of the ninth inning, I legitimately thought to myself, I was like, they're going to win this game, aren't they? And, I mean, it took three batters. They didn't record it out. And really one of the crazier finishes we'll ever see.
Now, Jesse, that thought was so pervasive with you, and it was pervasive with me, too, that when the next night rolled around, I went, oh, yeah, we got this. I mean, this is going to be an unlikely hero in Bryce Johnson, but I have every confidence in the world that we'll get it done. They didn't, and I was still like, oh, still pretty cool. I mean, they got really, really close, and I know there are no moral victories, but man, you just it was weird. Like, I didn't get that dopamine rush that I was used to getting like the night before.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, because the crazier thing about the second game was, like, they, in a weird way, right, they kind of did the heart the first run. They loaded the bases. Yeah. They had nobody out. And at that point, you know, I don't know, for me, and maybe this is crazy, but, like, my sense was kind of like, all right, you know, you kind of did what you needed to do, and now let's see what happens, right? Like, you know, you did the hard part. You got the guys on base. You know, you made the guys sweat. And, you know, at the end of the day, I guess credit to Humberto Castellanos and his 90-mile-an-hour fastball for being able to get out of the thing. But, you know, that's the beauty of baseball. There's a million different ways to do it. But yeah, like, it wasn't discouraging in the way that so many games were last year, because this team has proven, you know, from Jump Street that they're capable of making this thing happen. And it's great. You know, I mean, the Mike Schilt from literally day one in spring training has been obsessively speaking publicly and privately. And the guys in the clubhouse have been speaking obsessively publicly and privately about having, you know, sort of this mentality and this identity. And they're going out there and they're walking the walk all season long. So it's great. It's fun. Never feels like they're out of a game. You know, they had the 8-0 comeback in April. And I think that was the one that kind of set the tone where it was like, all right, you know, they're capable of doing this year. You know, you win your first three extra inning games. That certainly didn't hurt after what happened last season. So it's a fun team. It really is.
Jesse, your thought on the Padres slate of all-stars? Obviously, had the two voted in last Wednesday in Profar and Tatis, and then three more named to the team on Sunday. And honestly, the one that I saw the most pushback, at least nationally, on wasn't Jackson Merrill, who really does absolutely deserve to be there. I saw more pushback in Luis Arraez than any of the other Padres all-stars. And I think that goes to what you really consider to be the most valuable part of an offensive player. It's almost like a personal preference sort of thing.
There's definitely that. I think there's also the element of, like, he was on the ballot as a second baseman and he hasn't really played much second base since coming to the Padres. So, like, talking to some of the Arizona people over the weekend, because remember, Arraez and Ketel Marte were the finalists at second base. They were all like, this guy's not even a second baseman. And I was like, well, he was, you know, and then he came here and Xander got hurt and the Padres had to kind of mix everything up and they decided to stick him at first base. But, you know, so I think there's a couple of things at play there. But there's no doubt, you know, I mean, it's not new news that there's a lot of people in baseball who don't look at batting average the same way that maybe we did, you know, 25, 30 and beyond years ago. But, you know, for me, All-Star is about a few different things. It's not a cut and dry black and white. You know, one, I think, quote unquote, star power does matter. I do think that goes in, and having name recognition. And he's got that because he's won a batting title the last couple of years. Beyond that, how do you compare to the guys at the position you play? That's obviously a little bit of a weird one, as we just discussed. And then further, all right, what is your skill set? And how does it compare to other people of that skill set? And Luis Arraez is the best when it comes to that skill set, when it comes to hitting for average, when it comes to collecting base hits. I think he pretty much stands alone in the National League here in 2024. So, you know, for all those reasons, you know, for me, Luis Arraez is absolutely an all-star. Having two guys voted in is a big deal. It really doesn't happen often. You know, it hadn't happened here, what, since 1997 that the Padres had two guys voted in. The fact that they're both outfielders who never played the outfield before last year kind of makes it that much more special. What a credit to both Fernando and, you know, Profar. I guess Jerickson's been an outfielder, you know, a little bit the last couple of years, but he came up as an infielder. Then you add in Merrill, obviously. What a phenomenal story. Suarez really, you know, hadn't had a hiccup before the other night when, you know, he was kind of on fumes out there. All really, really well-deserving. Five is a big number. It's a really, really big number, and this team is a lot to be proud of.
Talking to our pal Jesse Agler here on Ben and Woods this morning, and, you know, we all compare. You just did it talking about last year. We've done it in here a million times. You know, when it comes to the job of a general manager, though, you know, is it fair? You have to treat each season as its own, as its own silo, as Mike Schilt likes to call it, the vacuum, right? And we were just talking about this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, Jesse. When you look at this team and you call these games every night, you see a team and you go, all right, we have to do whatever we, if you're the front office, we have to do whatever we have to do. This is truly the team that deserves, you know, a frontline starter or a, you know, excellent bullpen piece. Obviously, AJ's been willing to do that many, many times in his tenure, but you can't really look at what he's done in the past. You just kind of have to focus on the team that you have in front of you. Do you agree also when you watch this team that they've absolutely earned, you know, some moves, some help, whatever they may need to try to push this thing over the finish line?
Yes, of course. But also, you know, I would say that we all, and I include myself in this, have a tendency to oversimplify the trade deadline when we talk about it.
Big time.
You know, we say, hey, a buyer or seller, right? Well, okay, obviously, if you're going to make it that black and white, the Padres are buyers. You know, they're in playoff position. As you said, they have a team that has earned the opportunity to push forward and try and make this thing happen. But A, you know, complicated deals coming together, it's complicated. So it's not going to be as straightforward as like, all right, we need a starter and a reliever, so let's go out and talk to this team and that team and we'll get it done. You know, there's so many moving parts that make it happen. And then the other thing to always keep in mind is, you know, A, there's the cliche of like, hey, the best moves are the ones you never made. But then also that, you know, it's the thing of you think you're making a move that's like a no-brainer. Of course, this is going to work out. But it doesn't always.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, I don't have to. We can go down Adam Frazier Boulevard and you know Austin Nola Road or whatever you want, right? Like you know, moves that in the moment you thought were like, oh, of course, like this is great. The guy's hitting what was Adam Frazier hitting when he got here a couple of years ago? It was like 330 something, yeah. Like 340.
Yeah. The change of scenery
was brutal for him. And you know, I don't blame AJ for that because like we all would have made that move. Yeah, we're gonna. That's exactly the kind of guy we need right now. You know what I mean? So like. That landmine is out there on all these potential deals. You say, hey, we need a frontline starter. You look at whatever name you want to of the guys that might fall into that bucket right now who could be available. And, like, it is not automatic that guy is just going to continue to have the ERA and the sort of, you know, strikeout rate that he does wherever he is now when he comes here. That's just not the way baseball works. On the other side of that, you might acquire somebody who you go, huh, that's a little bit odd. That doesn't seem like the kind of guy they're going after, but it clicks. Right. And maybe, you know, Ruben has a conversation with him and they look at something together and all of a sudden he's even better than he was somewhere else. So, again, it's just not as simple and straightforward as like, all right, here's our laundry list or our grocery list. And you know, let's go out and get one of each because you just never know how it's going to end up going. And, you know, that's not even getting into the chemistry issues that can arise, you know, both with departures and arrivals. So it's a really, really kind of, you know, perilous tightrope that any general manager has to walk this time of year, particularly if you have a team, as the Padres do, that is performing well. Look, there's no doubt they need pitching help, right? Because of injuries, because of the Darvish situation, and because, quite frankly, every competitive team probably could always use more pitching. But it's just not that easy, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind these next couple weeks.
I love what you said about chemistry, too, because we had Tim Flannery in yesterday, and he was, you know, part of the three World Series championships for the Giants, and he talked about what Brian Sabian did, bringing in guys that hadn't won before and that were really, really hungry. And I thought about that for a second, and I went, oh, yeah, the Hunter Pences of the world, the Marco Scuderos of the world, the guys that were like, all right, I'm on a winner now. I'll do anything
Emilio
I have to do.
Pagan.
Yeah, Pagan, right?
Or like, you bring in guys who have championship pedigree, who know how to get it done already.
Right.
I mean, you can always go
you
the
can go
other
the other
side
way
of every
too.
Argument.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, it's interesting to think about.
Both have value. I've talked to GMs about both of those things before, and it's a real thing. You know, you can go back. You know, like it's kind of a random example, but it's relevant with the 84 celebration. And you mentioned Flannery. Terry Kennedy is one of those guys in the mid late 80s. He kept popping up on really good teams.
Yeah,
that's not an accident. That's not an accident. Like that's the kind of guy that, you know, if you're a competitive team, you wanted to go out and get and say, hey, this guy knows what it takes. This guy has sort of been there and done that. And there's no doubt, like chemistry, I think when we talk about that, often people think about personality and, you know, quote unquote leadership, you know, leading by example or leading by voice, whatever it is. And that exists. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. But, you know, chemistry can also mean, you know, the kinds of guys who have had certain experiences or at certain points in their careers. If you got a bunch of guys who are going into free agency, you know, on a given year, obviously they're going to be concerned about themselves, you know, not just about the team. If you got a bunch of guys who have contracts, are they, you know, it's like you can go a million different directions with that. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think that's an important thing to always consider, you know, kind of mixing in the hungry guys with the guys who know what it takes, you know, come August and September and October to try and get it done. And that's sort of like the magic recipe that any head of baseball operations is always trying to concoct.
Now, Jesse, the Padres should be getting one of those championship players back probably sometime this week in Xander Bogaerts, two rings under his belt, good chemistry guy. Don't know what the production is going to look like, obviously, right away, especially after missing, 2 months here with the shoulder fracture. But, and Mike Schill will be asked about it either today or tomorrow. But how do you kind of envision the Padres lineup working as Xander comes back and where to put him back at second? Does Jake move back to first? Does Ariza do when Manny needs to get a day off? It kind of adds some complications to Mike Schilt's job. Certainly a good complications. Don't forget, you can listen to Sam Levitt's podcast, Inside San Diego Baseball. Sam covers everything going on with the Padres. Just find it at 97.3thefansd.com, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcast. That includes segments from the pre- and the post-game show. Sam is always doing all kinds of interviews down on the field, and you can get that at your convenience by downloading the free Odyssey app. All right, it is a Tuesday. We got Jesse Agler standing by to talk some Padres baseball. He will join us right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So I tweeted on Friday night when the Padres dramatically won 10-8 on the Manny Machado walk-off home run. Hey, better than a 7-2 win. And, of course, you get some pushback because, obviously, you had to use more bullpen arms. Yeah. You stressed everybody out. But I think for an announcer, absolutely, a 7-2, no-drama win at the end provides no opportunity to shine the way Jesse Agler was able to shine on Friday night in what was one of the wildest innings of the Major League Baseball season. And Jesse joins us right now here on a Tuesday on 97.3 The Fan. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning. Yeah, that was that's one we'll remember for a very, very, very long time.
Now, while it's happening, it's not that fun because you're looking like, oh, this is going to be the worst loss of the season here, blowing a 5-run lead in the ninth inning. But in the hindsight, that was a fun one to call.
It was, and you know what was neat for me was, as somebody who watches literally every single pitch of this, you know, team, when it went to the bottom of the inning, I, in my brain, and this is really for the first time since the beginning of last year, I was like, I think they're going to do this.
Yep.
You know, because last season there came a point where I stopped feeling that way, sadly. You know, I mean, it was just sort of the reality of how last year went. And for the first half of last year, you know, it seemed like they had the right guys coming up in those spots time and time again, whether it was extra innings or just down by one in the ninth or whatever. And it just never happened. And it was flummoxing, and we've never been able to explain it, and we never will be able to explain it. And so I kind of lost the ability to be like, all right, I'm confident in this moment. But the way this team has played this year, even after, you know, the heartbreak and the gut punch at the top of the inning, you know, when you look down and you saw who was coming up in the bottom half, like during that commercial break in the middle of the ninth inning, I legitimately thought to myself, I was like, they're going to win this game, aren't they? And, I mean, it took three batters. They didn't record it out. And really one of the crazier finishes we'll ever see.
Now, Jesse, that thought was so pervasive with you, and it was pervasive with me, too, that when the next night rolled around, I went, oh, yeah, we got this. I mean, this is going to be an unlikely hero in Bryce Johnson. But I have every confidence in the world that we'll get it done. They didn't, and I was still like, oh, still pretty cool. I mean, they got really, really close, and I know there are no moral victories, but man, you just it was weird. Like, I didn't get that dopamine rush that I was used to getting like the night before.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, because the crazier thing about the second game was, like, they, in a weird way, right, they kind of did the heart the first run, they loaded the bases, yeah, they had nobody out, and at that point, you know, I don't know, for me, and maybe this is crazy, but like, my sense was kind of like, all right, you know, you kind of did what you needed to do, and now let's see what happens, right? Like, you know, you did the hard part. You got the guys on base. You know, you made the guys sweat. And, you know, at the end of the day, I guess credit to Humberto Castellanos and his 90-mile-an-hour fastball for being able to get out of the thing. But, you know, that's the beauty of baseball. There's a million different ways to do it. But, yeah, like, it wasn't discouraging in the way, yeah, that so many games were last year, because this team has proven, you know, from Jump Street that they're capable of making this thing happen. And it's great. You know, I mean, Mike Schilt from literally day one in spring training has been obsessively speaking publicly and privately. And the guys in the clubhouse have been speaking obsessively publicly and privately about having, you know, sort of this mentality and this identity. And they're going out there and they're walking the walk all season long. So it's great. It's fun. Never feels like they're out of a game. You know, they had the 8-0 comeback in April. And I think that was the one that kind of set the tone, where it was like, all right, you know, they're capable of doing this year. You know, you win your first three extra inning games. That certainly didn't hurt after what happened last season. So it's a fun team. It really is.
Jesse, your thought on the Padres slate of all-stars? Obviously had the two voted in last Wednesday in Profar and Tatis, and then three more named to the team on Sunday. And honestly, the one that I saw the most pushback, at least nationally, on wasn't Jackson Merrill, who really does absolutely deserve to be there. I saw more pushback in Luis Arraez than any of the other Padres All-Stars. And I think that goes to what you really consider to be the most valuable part of an offensive player. It's almost like a personal preference sort of thing.
There's definitely that. I think there's also the element of, like, he was on the ballot as a second baseman, and he hasn't really played much second base since coming to the Padres. So, like, talking to some of the Arizona people over the weekend, because remember, Arraez and Ketel Marte were the finalists at second base. They were all like, this guy's not even a second baseman. And I was like, well, he was, you know, and then he came here and Xander got hurt and the Padres had to kind of mix everything up and they decided to stick him at first base. But, you know, so I think there's a couple of things at play there, but there's no doubt, you know, I mean, it's not new news that there's a lot of people in baseball who don't look at batting average the same way that maybe we did, you know, 25, 30 and beyond years ago. But, you know, for me, All-Star is about a few different things. It's not a cut and dry black and white. You know, one, I think, quote unquote, star power does matter. I do think that goes in, and having name recognition. And he's got that because he's won a batting title the last couple of years. Beyond that, how do you compare to the guys at the position you play? That's obviously a little bit of a weird one, as we just discussed. And then further, all right, what is your skill set? And how does it compare to other people of that skill set? And Luis Arraez is the best when it comes to that skill set, when it comes to hitting for average, when it comes to collecting base hits. I think he pretty much stands alone in the National League here in 2024. So, you know, for all those reasons, you know, for me, Luis Arraez is absolutely an all-star. Having two guys voted in is a big deal. It really doesn't happen often. You know, it hadn't happened here, what, since 1997 that the Padres had two guys voted in. The fact that they're both outfielders who never played the outfield before last year kind of makes it that much more special. What a credit to both Fernando and, you know, Profar. I guess Jerickson's been an outfielder, you know, a little bit the last couple of years, but he came up as an infielder. Then you add in Merrill, obviously. What a phenomenal story. Suarez really, you know, hadn't had a hiccup before the other night when, you know, he was kind of on fumes out there. All really, really well-deserving. Five is a big number. It's a really, really big number, and this team is a lot to be proud of.
Talking to our pal Jesse Agler here on Ben and Woods this morning, and, you know, we all compare. You just did it talking about last year. We've done it in here a million times. You know, when it comes to the job of a general manager, though, you know, is it fair? You have to treat each season as its own, silo, as Mike Schilt likes to call it, the vacuum, right? And we were just talking about this. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, Jesse. When you look at this team and you call these games every night, you see a team and you go, all right, we have to do whatever if you're the front office, we have to do whatever we have to do. This is truly the team that deserves, you know, a frontline starter or a, you know, excellent bullpen piece. Obviously, AJ's been willing to do that many, many times in his tenure, but you can't really look at what he's done in the past. You just kind of have to focus on the team that you have in front of you. Do you agree also when you watch this team that they've absolutely earned, you know, some moves, some help, whatever they may need to try to push this thing over the finish line?
Yes, of course. But also, you know, I would say that we all, and I include myself in this, have a tendency to oversimplify the trade deadline when we talk about it.
Big time.
You know, we say, hey, a buyer or seller, right? Well, okay, obviously, if you're going to make it that black and white, the Padres are buyers. You know, they're in playoff position. As you said, they have a team that has earned the opportunity to push forward and try and make this thing happen. But A, you know, complicated deals coming together, it's complicated. So it's not going to be as straightforward as like, all right, we need a starter and a reliever, so let's go out and talk to this team and that team and we'll get it done. You know, there's so many moving parts that make it happen. And then the other thing to always keep in mind is, you know, A, there's the cliche of like, hey, the best moves are the ones you never made. But then also that, you know, it's the thing of you think you're making a move that's like a no-brainer. Of course, this is going to work out, but it doesn't always.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, I don't have to. We can go down Adam Frazier Boulevard and you know, Austin Nola Road or whatever you want, right? Like, you know, moves that in the moment you thought were like, oh, of course, like this is great. The guy's hitting what was Adam Frazier hitting when he got here a couple of years ago? It was like 330 something, yeah. Like 340.
Yeah. Batting champion.
The change of scenery was brutal for him. And you know, I don't blame AJ for that because like, we all would have made that move. Yeah, that's exactly the kind of guy we need right now. You know what I mean? So like that landmine is out there on all these potential deals. You say, hey, we need a frontline starter. You look at whatever name you want to of the guys that might fall into that bucket right now who could be available. And like, it is not automatic that guy is just going to continue to have the ERA and the sort of, you know, strikeout rate that he does wherever he is now when he comes here. That's just not the way baseball works. On the other side of that, you might acquire somebody who you go, huh, that's a little bit odd. That doesn't seem like the kind of guy they're going after, but it clicks, right? And maybe, you know, Ruben has a conversation with him and they look at something together and all of a sudden he's even better than he was somewhere else. So again, it's just not as simple and straightforward as like, all right, here's our laundry list or our grocery list and you know, let's go out and get one of each. Because you just never know how it's going to end up going. And, you know, that's not even getting into the chemistry issues, that can arise, you know, both with departures and arrivals. So it's a really, really kind of, you know, perilous tightrope, that any general manager has to walk this time of year, particularly if you have a team, as the Padres do, that is performing well. Look, there's no doubt they need pitching help, right? Because of injuries, because of the Darvish situation, and because, quite frankly, every competitive team probably could always use more pitching. But it's again, it's just not that easy, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind these next couple weeks.
I love what you said about chemistry, too, because we had Tim Flannery in yesterday, and he was, you know, part of the three World Series championships for the Giants, and he talked about what Brian Sabian did, bringing in guys that hadn't won before and that were really, really hungry. And I thought about that for a second, and I went, oh, yeah, the Hunter Pences of the world, the Marco Scuderos of the world, the guys that were like, all right, I'm on a winner now. I'll do anything
Emilio
I have to do.
Emilio Pagan.
Yeah, Pagan, right?
Or like, you bring in guys who have championship pedigree, who know how to get it done already.
Right.
I mean, you can always go
you
the
can go
other
the other
side
way
of every
too.
Argument.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, I just it's interesting to think about.
Both have value. I've talked to GMs about both of those things before, and it's a real thing. You know, you can go back. You know, like it's kind of a random example, but it's relevant with the 84 celebration. And you mentioned Flannery. Terry Kennedy is one of those guys in the mid late 80s. He kept popping up on really good teams.
Yeah,
that's not an accident. That's not an accident. Like, that's the kind of guy that, you know, if you're a competitive team, you wanted to go out and get and say, hey, this guy knows what it takes. This guy has sort of been there and done that. And there's no doubt, like, chemistry, I think when we talk about that, often people think about personality and, you know, quote unquote leadership, you know, leading by example or leading by voice, whatever it is. And that exists. I'm not trying to poo poo it, but, you know, chemistry can also mean, you know, the kinds of guys who have had certain experiences or at certain points in their careers. If you got a bunch of guys who are going into free agency, you know, on a given year, obviously they're going to be concerned about themselves, you know, not just about the team. If you got a bunch of guys who have contracts, are they, you know, it's like you can go a million different directions with that. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think that's an important thing to always consider, you know, kind of mixing in the hungry guys with the guys who know what it takes, you know, come August and September and October to try and get it done. And that's sort of like the magic recipe that any head of baseball operations is always trying to concoct.
Now, Jesse, the Padres should be getting one of those championship players back probably sometime this week in Xander Bogaerts, two rings under his belt, good chemistry guy. Don't know what the production is going to look like, obviously, right away, especially after missing, 2 months here with the shoulder fracture. But, and Mike Shull will be asked about it either today or tomorrow. But how do you kind of envision the Padres lineup working as Xander comes back, and where to put him back at second? Does Jake move back to first? Does Arise a day when Manny needs to get a day off? It kind of adds some complications to Mike Schilt's job. Certainly a good complications, but complications nonetheless.
Yeah, I like your word choice. It's because I think a lot of people will be like, oh, it's a good problem to have, you know, cliche. And I think complication is better than problem, because I don't see it as problematic. And yeah, I think generally, and I'm speaking out of turn here because I haven't asked Mike or anybody else about it, but like, I think you can move it around a little bit. You know, Manny's been playing more third base. So, you know, all right, is that, you know, DH spot now a little bit less of a Solano and a little bit more of an Arise, you know, quite possibly. But, you know, they can mix and match every single day, right? They can kind of look at who's in there and move some things around. So yeah, there's definitely some options. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be the expert. I certainly have my opinion, but it's not really worth much of anything. And they'll figure that out. Look, the key thing for one of these things, and everybody involved knows this, is communication. And, you know, just kind of getting with everybody. And Mike Shildt is tremendous when it comes to this. You know, just kind of getting with everybody and saying, all right, here's the plan. Here's the idea. Here's how we kind of want to handle this. Obviously subject to change, you know, based on, you know, how things go, but here's sort of how we're going to do, and to get everybody on board. You know, that's part of the job of the manager, and I have no doubt he'll be able to do that. But yeah, you know, it'll look a little bit different when Xander returns than it looked in the last couple of months. But look, these things always end up kind of working out also. Like, you know, somebody else gets hurt, unfortunately, or somebody's not performing, or somebody just needs a little bit of a break, and you kind of do this. So it's a positive, obviously, getting somebody of Xander's caliber back, and it's only going to make this team better.
All right, Jesse, last incorporator for a couple of weeks. Next week, of course, you're off, all-star break. Certainly you deserve at least a few days before hitting the road for another East Coast trip, right? Coming up right after the break again. So enjoy this time in San Diego.
Did you guys hear that?
Few and far between. Now, you mentioned last week you were going to bring your own incorporator word to the table. Do you still want to hold to that, or do you want us to come up with something?
Sure. No, I'm ready to go if you want.
Let's do it. Oh, all right. God. So now, Jesse gets to announce to us today's incorporator word.
So I had honestly forgotten about this until about 4 minutes ago that I said I would do it. But it popped in my head as we were talking here, and as I'm sitting in a random parking lot in Macosta somewhere after dropping my son off at camp, I am hearing his Tamagotchi beeping away in the back seat, because those are apparently back. And as annoying as ever. So I thought the word Tamagotchi might be a fun
Tamagotchi. It's like, okay, so what is that for people who don't understand or know?
Sure. For those of you lucky enough to not know what a Tamagotchi is, it was like really popular. I mean, when I was, in middle school, and they're back now, they're like these little electronic quote unquote pets, that kids have, and it's got some buttons and it beeps very, very loudly.
But if you don't take care of it, you can like die.
Yes. It, and then you reset it. It's a great life lesson. You just hit the button to reset it after it dies, just like taking care of a dog, right? That's what a Tamagotchi is, and it's a funny sounding word, obviously. I think it's a Japanese word, so
Tamagotchi.
It might sound a little bit out of place on the broadcast.
Yeah, it was perfect. If those were big when Jesse was in middle school, I'm a few years younger than Jesse. I think those were like Happy Meal toys at one point.
At one point, Ben. If you're Ben in my age, we played with cigarettes when we were little kids. That's all we got to play with. So
and Ben in particular.
Ben in particular. Yeah.
You guys had switchblade knives, matches,
butterfly knives, cigarettes, Rambo knives,
Jacks and marbles.
Yeah, I did play Jacks.
I actually did play Jacks.
I did too. Loved
in
it.
School.
Bring some Jacks in for summer break next week. Let's get it going. I'm serious. It's Ben and Wood summer break. We're gonna explore
literally
the space.
The game is trying to pick things up off of the ground. That was entertainment.
That was entertainment
back
for us.
In our
what
day,
about,
Jesse.
What about Barrel of Monkeys?
So stupid.
We had Barrel of Monkeys.
We also used to, sniff glue and
pick
eat
up
paste.
Sticks.
Yeah, pick up sticks.
People love picking things up back in the day.
Really did.
Now it just is like a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Like, can I not pick things up anymore, please?
Now I have a grabber. Yeah. Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate
it, buddy. Have a good broadcast tonight, rest of the week. Enjoy your All-Star break. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good, guys.
Jesse Agler, voice of the San Diego Padres. Tamagotchi is tonight's incorporator word.
Jax was
I think Tony Gwynn's Jr. is back after a weekend off as well on the broadcast. So hopefully everything goes as planned.
Bounce the ball.
And you got to grab the jacks and then catch the ball before it lands.
Here's two. Now
three,
I got three.
Got three
four.
At a time.
But you take them, you sprinkle them out.
It's a game of manual dexterity.
Manual dexterity. It was really good hand-eye coordination stuff. I'm going to get some jacks for the kids.
Then you
throw
leave them out
other.
And you step on one with
yeah.
a bare foot.
Oh, God.
And it's agonizing.
It's over. You sons of bitches. Who left these jacks out? You did. You brought them home. It's 2024.
We didn't want these.
Yeah, it's 2024, dude.
All right, we've got a Rindle Report, some headlines coming up next, and then Kyle Higashioka in studio, all in our final hour of Ben and Woods, coming up on 97.3 The Fan.